Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. We are live, and we are actually providing you with some content that's going to lead us into Monday. And I said last week, and I believe I mentioned it on Monday as well this week, that we will be covering the Constitution. So if you have forgotten, the 17th, which I believe is Monday, let me make sure it's time to look at that count. Yep, the Monday the 17th is Constitution Day. Now, technically that week, people try to find some time to recognize it. You know, for such a significant event in this this republic's history, you would think that that particular day would be highlighted far more than just the Declaration of Independence, even though the Declaration of Independence was truly the catalyst that sent us down this path to this constitutional republic. The Constitutional Republic is that one document that is the document that secures our liberties and protects us from tyranny. Unfortunately, we're not living by that anymore. That's the whole point of this show. And so I'm going to be putting up on my website, and it will be on the podcast page right underneath my latest podcast. So you got to go all the way down, because it is in sequence of last to first, you know, from the top to the bottom. So if you go all the way down to my latest podcast, then I have kind of relative information right above the Chinese live organ harvesting contact information. You will be able to find a PDF copy of, and this is John Rowland's highlighted or annotated version of the Constitution. And he uses different colors to actually highlight and bring out whether this part of the Constitution is being violated egregiously or what have you. And you'd be surprised how much color he has applied to the Constitution. So we're going to go through that on Monday, Tuesday, whatever it kind of takes to go through that. Because I truly believe that if we're not aware, and I say this all the time, and so it's worth repeating again. Why is it important that we read our scriptures on a regular basis? Why is it important to read the Constitution on a regular basis, to become very familiar with the words, the doctrine, the process, the laws, whatever you want to put it into context? Because when we all of a sudden start living under a different doctrine, or things change within the doctrines of religion or within our government's doctrine, then we should be able to recognize that we're not abiding by the law. We're not abiding by the scriptures. We're not abiding by the Constitution. That's why it is critical that we should be reading this on a regular basis. And that's precisely why the education system does not have your kids learn, read, and even understand the Constitution. They may kind of cover the Bill of Rights, that they have a right to be stupid, and they have a right to say things, and for peaceable assemblies and so forth, but they even pervert that in getting kids to think they have a right to protest, that they have a right to stop traffic and to break the laws in their protest. I'm sorry. That is not within the purview of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. But again, that's kind of how it goes. So it's kind of, this is a special show. We're going to kind of go through the ratification, highlights of the ratification debate. So I'm going to actually start off with John Marshall. We're talking jurisdiction today. And I want you to start really appreciating the fact, because I actually had a conversation. I don't know if he's listening. He ran for governor this past year, and I think he got eliminated at the primaries, but he had a good run. His name's Mark Erbach. He called me and talked to me, and he goes, where is it that I can find the hard facts of the limitations of the federal government's jurisdiction? And he was speaking more specifically regarding the Supreme Court. And I said, well, the Supreme Court is a part of the federal government. It doesn't matter whether it's Congress, whether it is the president, or whether it is the Supreme Court. They're all limited by the same jurisdiction. They are all constrained by that same document and those enumerated objects within that document. And so he goes, well, can you send that to me? And so I told him I would. So tonight I will send him that email. So Mark, if you're listening, I will get it to you. I think he may have hoped that I would send it to him by now, but to no avail. I've been really busy. It's been one of those weeks. However, I don't believe I mentioned that this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. It is also sponsored by 1798Part2.org and RepublicReview.org. And the reason why most of you are tuning in and listening and actually sharing the information of this show and getting other people to tune in as well, that's why we're growing, is that this really is the only show that provides you the actual process that points you to the mechanism that is going to be necessary in getting the federal government back into scope if we are going to save this constitutional republic and our Constitution. So the number to call in is 215-867-8255, and I will jump straight down into some groveling real quick. I need your help. There's a lot of organizations that need your help that are actually helping us. I will be putting up, and I'm actually going to include in these endorsements, the endorsement statements that I have received from G. Edward Griffin, from the Constitution Association, from the We the People Foundation, so forth and so on and so on. And I want to start putting that out there because it's one thing to, you know, just say, hey, you know, our sheets have been slept on by three presidents, but actually to show you which presidents and which sheets and so forth, because sometimes, you know, the sheets that those presidents slept on, you can't even buy. But anywho, because obviously they probably sell them for $50,000 or something like that. Anyway, I could use your help. I know that other organizations can use your help. I do also know there's not enough time of the day for all the help that is needed out of you. Basically speaking, there is so much work to be done that we really need as much as possible. So you have to figure out what is your greatest value, or I should say, how you can provide the greatest impact to what organization. Is it some of your time? Is it some of your services? In some cases, and in unfortunately a lot of cases, I think for some people, it's really just money because they just don't have the time to be able to to contribute their services or what have you. I know doctors and so forth, they're very busy. I mean, they work hard, they've studied hard, they've been a very, they've had an intense life, so it's not like their life has gotten any less intense. I mean, they work long hours and so forth. So what do? Well, they can't necessarily get out there and use their smarts in the GOP, central committees and those types of things. They might be able to. I don't know, depending on their workload and so forth, but sometimes it is money. But if it's something that you have, like a computer and a phone, and even though you may not think that you can contribute much by using your computer or your phone, you can send an email. And I haven't said this yet, but the Constitution Club is a really good organization that you can kind of lend into, become a part of. And I believe they're going to be leading a charge on starting to send out emails. And I think this would be a good way for you to become a part of an email wave, because how overwhelming would it be if you're a state legislator in the state of Utah, the state of Georgia, any of these states that could easily ignore the 17th Amendment and easily start going back to appointing their senators? How overwhelming would it be if all of a sudden they woke up and they received thousands of emails and thousands of phone calls from people, and they don't know where these emails are coming from? All they know is they're getting a groundswell from thousands of people. You can become a part of that if you have a phone, if you've got a computer, if you can get engaged, then by all means, please do, because even those little things. It's just like, you know, how the a lot of organizations just try to use people to make phone calls to their congressman. Don't waste your time calling congressmen anymore. They're beyond help. They are so engrossed in corruption and extortion and so forth that there's just no helping them. The only way we can help them and free them from the swamp is getting your state legislators to start demanding constitutional compliance. Really, that has to be the mantra. That has to be that one phrase that we all start chanting. Instead of stopping abortion, stopping immigration, or anything else, it has to be compliance. Compliance. They have to start complying to the Constitution. So all you got to do, if you want to help me and you want to be directly involved and associated with Reclaiming the Republic and working on getting your state legislators attuned to this and on board with this, then send me an email, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. What I would like you to also do is consider looking at the organizations I'm going to be putting up on my endorsement page as soon as I get that up. And then you can actually go and support those organizations because they are fighting very similar causes. They're on board with supporting this cause as well. So you can kind of kill two birds or three or four birds with one stone. I'm at a hard break, as you can tell. And when we come back, I'm going to kind of try to fly through some stuff because I want to get through these ratification highlights so that it'll help us lead into the Constitution reading on Monday. And I think you're going to find it interesting as we talk about the violations of the Constitution as we read through them. So I will be right back after word from our sponsors. Thank you so much. Most people resist change, but how would you like to be rewarded in at least two ways for considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy believes your smile is a reflection upon him, and that is a mutually shared reward between both him and you. Another reward is improving your overall health by working with your dentist like Dr. Tracy and developing a strategy in maintaining your dental health. But how would you like a direct incentive in considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy and his staff from time to time offer a special referral program. For every new patient you refer who becomes a patient, Dr. Tracy will reward you with $50 off your dental work. Consequently, if you refer five people, that's $250 off your dental work. Give them a call and ask for the details and the availability of the referral program by calling 466-6614 or go to VonTracyDDS.com. Again, that's 466-6614 or sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. And one thing I can't contribute to the dialogue at all today, just like every other day that I've been broadcasting, that there really is no sign that the federal government is going to do anything regarding all of their violations of the Constitution and exercising powers that have never been delegated to them. Therefore, if we are going to, because those are the real problems, and I'm going to get into, you know, a little bit of news on this as well, why this is important, because they have no intent in relinquishing anything. And as a matter of fact, they have us set up. If you haven't seen The CRTV, you've probably seen it on social media, The Swamp, a little video clips. There's about four of them. And there is a montage. I'm actually going to create a link to the montage that was created by Northwest Grassroots. It's a pretty decent little short video. It's not too long. There are four short videos that make it a little longer, four times longer. But anywho, the whole point is that there is a lot of hyperbole and talk about the rising deficits that are coming from the GOP tax cuts. If you look at any in any direction on the news and the media, they are all, other than Fox, they're all talking about, the end is coming and all of this. The interesting thing is, not one of these articles is trying to take the high road and referring to the spending cuts that is never a part of the discussion or the constitutionality of the spending. They're just saying, hey, they're cutting taxes. So, you know, the government's spending all this money and we're going to have a huge deficit. Well, that's really not the problem of the tax cuts. Bottom line, the federal government has no business taxing us for things that it has no business doing. If that makes sense. I'm hoping it does. I don't think this is, you know, really deep economics that I'm speaking to here. But again, this short video kind of gives you a good detail on the swamp, and it speaks to how Congress is extorted into paying for their committees. Most people think, oh, you know, you're invited to the committee and you have to be in the know to be there. Oh, no, no. You have to be on the take to be on these committees. And so, especially the A committees, and they talk about the A, B, and C committees and so forth. And so the next time you see a congressperson, the next time they want to have a town hall meeting, ask them what committees they are on, and then, you know, tell them, hey, I got two questions. First, I want to find out what committees you're on, and then I have a follow-up question. And then they will tell you, oh, I'm on this, and they can brag to you that they're on the, you know, the Power, Ways, and Means, and they're on this committee and the Energy Committee and blah, blah, blah. A lot of A committees that they're going to brag about. And then you say, how much are you paying to be on each of those committees? Because it costs you money to be a part of those. So how much is that costing? And so, you know, we can figure out how much is going into the coffer for basically the Speaker of the House or the, if you're the minority party, then the minority leader. But they get this little treasure trove of money that you're paying into this process to help buy for re-elections and so forth. And all of this money comes from lobbyists that are basically giving you that money to pay them. And so it's an insidious level of corruption that if you walked into anywhere within City Hall, your county commissioners or anything like that, where they were playing those same kind of shenanigans, then you would probably be able to throw them in jail rather quickly. But as this one guy points out in the movie, if you watch this thing, I think it's Massey that basically says, hey, it's in the Constitution. Or somebody tells him, hey, we have the ability to write our own rules. Well, yeah, you have the ability to write your own rules on your own behavior, but you do not have the ability to assume any new roles, responsibilities, and powers so that these committees that you have that are taking tax money or taxing people for spending money on programs you have no power and authority to do means you're violating the Constitution, which means that you're just tantamount to treason. You are attacking our constitutional republic from within the actual government itself. And so how is that, my friends, not treason? How is that what they're doing? And they're all of these good non-swamp players are all talking about, you know, this is all bad. We got to clean this up. We got to clean this up. But they don't get it. They don't realize that they think that you have to clean it up from D.C. And one of the most honest lines I ever heard Obama say is that you cannot clean up D.C. from within. And he's absolutely right. The only way the DC can be purged and cleaned, that you can actually dry up the swamp and, you know, exterminate all the creatures and every germ, you can purify the District of Columbia once again. And there's only one way of doing this, is for the states to assert their authority over the Constitution by calling for republic review. It's really that easy. And I I'm not jesting. This is not something that, you know, I say lightly. And I would invite you to go look at this information and investigate this for yourself. There was an interesting news report that I kind of wanted to talk about. It's Chris Cecilia. He's a Fox News reporter. And he talked about seven Google employees, because I like talking about this corruption and this heavy bias that are in these companies. And these companies can do this. And the government can actually tax or incentivize with taxes. Say, you know, if you have an unbiased company, then, you know, we're not going to tax you. But if you want to have a biased company and you're involved in the media and commerce and all these things like Amazon and all these big companies, then they should hit them with a huge burdenous tax that would literally strip them of their values within a couple of years. And if they want to operate under those types of settings, then literally strip them of their value over the next few years by just hitting them with such heavy taxes because they are doing things. And so here's the problem, and the reason why this will never happen is because these companies are working with the government. Amazon has been providing information to the CIA for years and years and years. That's why they are the prime contractor, which was a contract that was awarded to them without any bids. It was just like the Halliburton contract given to Halliburton. That was a no-bid contract. They just received it. Amazon just received this huge data center bid, or I should say contract, without a bid. There's that kind of relationship. And so there's no way the government's going to go after them. And I'm going, well, is that because they're doing such a good job, or is that because they just don't want to get rid of that relationship? Both sides, the establishment, the swamp, the deep state is immersed into both sides. They own and sell souls on a daily basis. And so there's an interesting article out there. I would highly recommend you kind of read it. I think it was a BuzzFeed interview that actually kind of goes through why this guy Polson, who ended up leaving Google out of these seven top leaders, not necessarily leaders, but they're players in Google. And this one guy said, quote, "I'm offended that no weight has been given to the human rights community having a consensus. If you have a coalition letter from 14 human rights organizations and that can't even make it into the discussions on the ethics behind the decision that Google is making," he said he'd rather stand with the human rights organizations in this dispute. And so basically him and a bunch of other people have left. And this is all going over their, you know, their controversial, I want to call it the Dragon. They have a search engine. Yeah, it's Project Dragonfly. That's what the code name is. And it is basically doing searching for the Chinese government, finding out all the bad people and spying on them and so forth. And then they also have this Pentagon program called an AI program. And so, and I think the project for that is Project Maven. Interesting. I think there used to be a typing program called Maven typing or something like that. But anywho, I didn't know if I finished on the point of the guarantee clause, but I know I did not get into the list of states that we need to target. I've got a little over a minute here so that I can get into the ratification highlights. The states that we really want to target by either splitting the states or the constitutional conventions in these states would be Washington, Oregon, California, Utah, Nevada, New Mexico, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Tennessee, Kentucky, Minnesota, Michigan, Georgia, Louisiana, New York, Massachusetts, and even Texas. Why target these states? Because these states have legitimately taken away the representation of good people in counties and have reapportioned them. And if you could drill, even in drilling into your own state, get a map of your state counties in one view on a browser and in a different browser, pull up a map of your legislative district and look at what counties has greater representation than you do. And it's not because of the people, because that would be the House. The Senate and the senators are supposed to be representing the counties. And as a matter of fact, Each county is supposed to have a representation for their people at a minimum, just like every state in the union has a minimum of one representative to represent the people of that state. And so we have gotten so far away from this. I just ask that you do just to take a quick look at your own state, and you will find that you have these red counties out there that are fighting for representation and they're not being represented. And that is how we are being slid into this socialism and into democracy. And that is the outcome of moving away from our Republican form of government. And so when we come back, I'm going to be drilling straight into these ratification highlights. I think you're going to love these. We'll be with John Marshall up next. So we'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Thank you so much. Most of my listeners understand the importance in having strategic goals, but do you have a long-term strategy for your dental health? Too many people are only focused on whitening their smile. I understand the appearance of your teeth can give you confidence, but this can risk your future health in only addressing the cosmetics of your teeth, and many dentists will take your money just to do this. They say failing to plan is planning to fail, and if you don't have a long-term strategy for your teeth and dental health, then you need a new dentist. Every dentist provides a dental plan, but Dr. Tracy and his staff develops a strategy to help you maintain and restore your dental health to what it needs to be. To develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health, connect with Dr. Von Tracy, DDS.com. That's VonTracyDDS.com. So you too can develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
And as I always say before I read citations, are the words in our founding documents, such as the ratification debates that I'm going to be reading here, are these the words of deceit? Or are the words that we have been taught and are the words that have been used by politicians, our progressive education system, our progressive colleges, professors, politicians, lawyers, bureaucrats, blah, 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 are the words that they've been using to basically hoodwink and assert that they can create healthcare and assert that they can do all of these things? Are those the words of deceit? Or, again, are the words that the framers told us how limited the federal government is, are those the words? Who's lying to us? Because the words that I'm relying upon, and in context to a contract, the words that were used in selling this contract, to me, are the legal binding words. The words and the drivel that comes from Pelosi and Feinstein and the rest of these creatures, or whether they're coming from the academics or whether they're coming from the mainstream media, those words are the soothsayers and the words of deceit and lies. And it comes down to this. This is John Marshall speaking, and he says, and I want to take my time going through this. He says, Mr. Chairman,
These, sir, are the points of federal jurisdiction to which he, and he's speaking to one of the anti-federalists, which he objects, with a few exceptions. Let us examine each of them with a supposition that the same impartiality will be observed there as in the other courts. And so he's talking about the jurisdiction of courts. And then see if there is any mischief will result from them with respect to cognizance in all cases arising under the Constitution and the laws of the United States. Now, you got to remember that only laws that are pertaining to the objects of the enumerated objects are constitutional laws. Case in point, the Civil Acts that was passed back in the 60s, is that within the Constitution? Is that pointing to an enumerated? No. That act and a lot of other acts that Congress has created, those fall under the jurisdiction of the District of Columbia because they have not been enumerated. They have not been amended to the Constitution. The only way you can make a change to the Constitution to give the federal government greater jurisdiction is via the Article 5 process. So that Civil Rights Act that is out there from the 60s, that was never amended to the Constitution. That never came out to the states to be ratified as an amendment. It is literally just an act. Therefore, it is only applied within the District of Columbia and cannot be utilized as law or constitutional law. And so I'm going to repeat what he says here. With the respect to its cognizance in all cases arising under the Constitution, not anything that, you know, the Congress can write acts for their own jurisdiction, because they have exclusive legislative authority for the District of Columbia. They can write laws that say you can't drive after sunrise or sunset, or, you know, you have to wear hats on these particular days. They have full cognizance and authority and jurisdiction and legislative power. They can create all the laws necessary for the District of Columbia because it does not fall under any state cognizance. And he says, arising under this Constitution and the laws of the United States. He says that the laws of the United States being paramount to the laws of the particular states. There is no case but what this is extended to. And so he goes on and says, has the government of the United States power to make laws on every subject? That's a question he poses. Does he understand it so? Because bottom line, the federal government can only make laws pertaining to the enumerated objects. I go back to what I said a few days ago, what Madison said, and I'll just pop it right up here because it's worth stating again. The powers of the federal government are enumerated. It can only operate in those certain cases. It has legislative powers on defined and limited objects, but which it cannot extend its jurisdiction. In other words, if marriage is not an enumerated object within the Constitution, we haven't amended it to say we're granting the federal government full cognizance over marriage, then they have no jurisdiction. Any case that goes into a federal court over marriage, you are surrendering to a court that has no jurisdiction and authority. Do you understand that? You can charge that this court, whenever a court comes up and says, we're claiming that, you know, we're going to hear this case. All you've got to do is you just say, you have no jurisdiction. Prove to me in the Constitution you have jurisdiction. And they can't, because there's no amendment. There is nothing in the Constitution that gives them any dictates over marriage, over life, over health care. They have created this maze of connections from their own legislative and from their own usurpations and from this ability of allowing and getting the states to allow by hoodwinking them, we'll take care of you, just let us do this. And all of it. all of it is unconstitutional. I go on with Marshall's comments stating, can they make laws affecting the mode? Because he's talking about the federal government. Can the federal government make laws affecting the mode of transferring property or contracts or claims between citizens of the same state? Absolutely not. I'm throwing that in there. Can they go beyond the delegated powers? If they were to make a law not warranted by the powers enumerated, it would be considered by the judges as an infringement of the Constitution, which they are to guard. I'm sorry, I'm getting a little spun up if you can't tell. This is just absolutely obvious. And here's John Marshall. Why is this so important? Here's John Marshall selling the Constitution on this fact that the federal government is limited and they can't do anything that is outside those enumerated objects. They have to function and operate within those few powers that they have been delegated, and that is it. They have no business meddling with it, my friends. None. And I'll go on because let me continue stopping on this rant. The reason this is important is because he was one later on that started using implied powers that, oh, well, we kind of have this implied ability to do this. We can, you know, and as they started reaching out and bringing something else in and bringing something else in, nobody stopped them. Why? Because nobody held these ratification debates up and said, look, right here, you said you couldn't do it. And now you're telling me, now that you have this kind of power, you think you're going to usurp power from us? Sorry. That is why Marshall, because he spoke here, he knew exactly what he said. So when he made rulings in 1817 and 1819 and opinions with those rulings, he knew he had to hide his tracks or he would be called out as a duplicitous liar and probably tried for treason. That's how serious this is, my friends. These folks knew what they were doing, and they were, whether they were noble and whether they stood up in front of me right now coming from the grave and said, I had the most noble intent, it doesn't matter. You violated the sacred and the most sacred law of our land, the Constitution, the supreme law, and you knew it. And you did it for personal gain and or you did it for whatever reason of nobility you think, it doesn't matter. Look at what the damage you have done that you started and you created by creating these unconstitutional footings. Because in these seven hallmark cases, my friends, he actually created a footing using the Supremacy Clause, using the Necessary and Proper Clause, well outside of the context of what they were defined and what they meant, as well as the General Welfare Clause, as well as the Commerce Clause. And so those four footings, the federal government started reaching out and grabbing states' powers and saying, well, we can do it under this clause. We can do it under this clause. When clearly within the ratification debates, and I've read it before, and even Madison said several times, even afterwards, in official capacities, that those clauses are not portals to granting them new powers. They only apply to the enumerated powers within this Constitution. And so as I move on, he basically talks about they would not consider such a law as coming under their jurisdiction, they would declare it void. This is, I'm almost out of time and I don't have enough time to finish this. So when we come back from the heartbreak, I'm actually going to kind of go through the last part of what he says and what the courts were supposed to do. And that's why, my friends, if you find yourself in a situation where you are dealing with the federal government on an issue that is outside their jurisdiction, when the Bundys were facing their federal trial, they could have easily just spoke up and said, we don't recognize your jurisdiction. Prove to us within the Constitution that we have delegated you the ability to operate on state lands and to assume all of these authorities, that power has been delegated to you constitutionally, because it wasn't. And so they would have been able to shut them down over the jurisdiction. But because it was, well, I'm out of time. So we'll be right back after word from our sponsors. Thank you so much. It's that time of year to get that dental checkup and cleaning. I know many of us are creatures of habit, and we tend to settle for what we know, and many of us are procrastinators. I was that way myself with my past dentist, jumping from one dentist chair to the next. From all the hopping, I've learned that all dentists are not equal, and I would challenge you to consider checking out Dr. Von Tracy. I work hard to make a living, and I'm not one to throw my hard-earned money away on just a good dentist. That's why it took me a couple of years to find a great dentist. From the excellence of his staff to the quality of the work, Dr. Tracy is the difference. I know it's time to put standards to our loyalty, so I would ask you to give Dr. Tracy a try by setting up your next appointment with him. Just go to VONTRACYDDS.com or call them at 509-466-6614. Again, sign up at VONTRACYDDS.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. So before, I want to finish on this Bundy and this whole jurisdiction thing, as I was just started to deviate. The important thing to remember here is that the federal government and our court system has limited jurisdictions. So when the federal government comes in to a state and starts exercising unconstitutional jurisdiction, for them to become successful, they have to co-op and get local law jurisdiction to go along with them. Just because they do get local law and local jurisdiction to go along with them does not make anything that they're doing any more constitutional. It just means that they have been able to coerce local law enforcement, like your sheriff. We have a bad sheriff up here in Spokane, and I'm sure that he would work and cooperate with the federal authorities in basically surrendering a person's constitutional rights and authority. This is happening all over the place. This is not an aberration out here. Is your sheriff a constitutional sheriff? I've reached out to Sheriff Mack. I want to re-engage him in these conversations, because what he's trying to do is he's trying to create a network of constitutional sheriffs, because technically, if you have a bad sheriff, you could be oppressed and you could be prosecuted and repressed and punished, all in violation of the law and violation of the Constitution, and people will turn their heads. And the reason why everybody was, we were all filled, I wasn't, but there were plenty of people filling the airwaves with so much garbage that the Bundys don't have any legal rights. That no, the federal government has no legal authority and a right to function in the state of Nevada, even with Nevada hoodwinking them. As Madison pointed out, that was me pounding on the desk, as Madison pointed out in 1817, even if the states allowed these shenanigans unconstitutionally to occur, it is still a violation of the Constitution. And it only takes a matter of time for we the people, the good citizens of these sovereign states, to wake up and hold our states accountable in protecting us from federal tyranny. Do you have what it takes? I hope so. I hope I do, because the cat's out of the bag. I mean, the genie's out of the bottle as far as what needs to happen moving forward. And I understand what those consequences may be, but I do understand that if we do nothing and we do not apply this only constitutional solution that we have, which is called republic review or auditing the Constitution, if we do not exercise this, we will lose it all. Now, there were two things I wanted to say that I completely remembered, and I want to give a heartfelt, I'm so sorry for the loss of life from the storm. There's nothing greater than the impact and the magnitude of the impact of somebody losing a life, whether that be the mother and the child that have died or any other people that are suffering. My heart goes out to them. Natural disasters and events like this are always traumatizing and they're just terrible. But bottom line, as we start looking at the cleanup and everything else, I hope people realize that by going to the federal government, you are surrendering to a tyrant that will devastate us, and they're going to sell us under the, you know, throw us under the bus and sell us downriver. They're going to do all of those bad metaphors, and we are going to become enslaved if we continually ask them to bail us out. There has to become consequences to living right there on the shoreline. You have to understand that it costs extra money to get yourself completely insured to where your costs are covered against the risks you're facing. That's the same thing with life insurance. That's the same. Insurance plays those games. And you know what? If you don't want to take those risks, then don't live there. Please, please go somewhere that's safe, where you can live in, you know, Hidden Valley and make ranch dressing for the rest of your life and be happy. But if you want to live life on the edge, you want to live where, you know, you've got, you know, the beauty of the seashore or, you know, California with the earthquakes, there are risks in life, but the federal government is not the underwriter in making those risks or marginalizing those risks and helping bail out and pay for. These are literally being, and it gets put onto the backs of the people. We cannot use compulsion. It is immoral for the federal government to just whimsically say, we're going to do these things and take from everybody to make that happen. That is an immoral society. So let me get back to what Marshall... there was one other rant I wanted to say. I know that Harrison Ford is out, you know, chanting and preaching, you know, about global climate change and all of this stuff. I want you to remember who he is. He may be a decent man. He may be a nice man, but he's a liar because that's his profession. He's out there to act and to get you to believe in a dialogue that is not the truth. And so all of these actors, when they get in front of that microphone, you got to start putting that out there that they're monkeys on a string that are literally just dancing to the organ grinder. And that is the metaphor. It has no racial connotation. The important thing is that they are performers and they are performing for very specific purposes. So back to Marshall and what Marshall was really trying to say here. And as he says, can they go beyond the delegated powers? If they were to make a law not warranted by any of the powers enumerated, it would be considered by the judges as an infringement of the Constitution, which they are to guard. They would not consider such a law as coming under their jurisdiction. So when Marshall did judicial review in 1803, because he knew that they had no jurisdiction over that, and he unconstitutionally reached down to exercise some unconstitutional authority that they call judicial review now, and everybody understands what judicial review is. It's an unconstitutional act. It's not in the Constitution. And so the point is that here he was telling us the honest thing, and there he was exerting his power with unrighteous dominion, and he was being a very nefarious man in executing unlawful laws and acts. So he goes on and says, this is the good Marshall, and he goes on and says, if they were to make a law not warranted by the powers enumerated, it would be considered by the judges as an infringement of the Constitution which they are to guard. They would not consider such a law as coming under their jurisdiction. They would declare it void. It will annihilate the state courts, says the honorable gentleman. Does not every gentleman here know that the causes in our courts are more numerous than they can decide according to their present construction? Look at the dockets. You will find them crowded with suits, which the life of man will not see determined. If some of these suits be carried to the courts, to other courts, would it be wrong? They will still have business enough. And basically what he's saying is that by expanding a few roles and responsibilities by these enumerated powers in the Constitution, moving those into a federal court jurisdiction, which was the intent of giving the federal government very limited powers and limited jurisdiction, it would relieve some of those local state courts' issues, like state-to-state issues and so forth. But it was not designed to be able to overreach its bounds or to reach down into lower courts and all of these things. My friends, it is so, so important for you. You need to see, you need to understand that our opportunity is right here at our foot, you know, right at our footsteps. We actually have the ability to start making the changes necessary. I don't have control over how much time we have. I know we don't have a lot of time, but we have to act. And if we don't act, then we and our posterity will have to live with the consequences. I hope you have kids. I hope you have grandchildren. And I hope that you have a good relationship with them. And if you want to maintain a good, honorable relationship with your family, those loved ones, then give them the greatest gift you can possibly give them by securing their liberty. If not, 5-10 years down the road, or whenever it happens, when we get subjugated, you're going to have to look them in the eye and say, you know, there was this kind of guy that I thought may have thought he was a wacko, this G.R. Mobley who asserted this, but, you know, now everything I know that he was saying was right. Everything that he told me was right, and I failed to act. And so I hope you can say to them that I actually did what I could and not have to bear the shame of saying I did nothing. Because that, as we've heard these great cliches, and I might get tongue-tied with so many of them, but there is this cliche that was written or stated by the great statesman Edmund Burke, that the only thing evil has to do to succeed is for good men to do nothing. And in today's context, the only thing that evil has to do to succeed is for good men and women to do nothing, because this is not a gender issue anymore. I believe that this issue and those who can lead this issue can be both male and female. And you can join me, because I am G.R. Mobley, Reclaiming the Republic, calling for an audit and republic review. And you can join me by sending me an email, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. God bless. Have a great weekend. And we're reading the Constitution on Monday, so please join me. Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. The show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities.